your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
everyone, welcome to Special Presentation with Mike and Ethan. Or
Elf will not be seen tonight.
Tell me, how many of the rest of you have suffered the pain and suffering that and suffering pain that every young boy and male identifying individual goes through when they grow their hair out to shoulder length? And people go, Prince Valiant.
You know, and it's not always just dudes too, because my sister once had the page boy haircut, and my brother, whenever she walked into the room, he would do like pretend he was blowing a coronet to announce the arrival of Prince Valiant.
That's all anyone seems to know about Prince Valiant. So as long as he has shoulder-length hair, you know, you could pretty much do anything with Prince Valiant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because, like, who, in the last 50 years, who has read Prince Valiant?
What's her name? The host of the Fantastic Funnies.
Oh, who was that? Farrah Fawcett or something?
Someone like that. It was, I don't know, but she was just like, oh, Prince Valiant, schlick, schlick, schlick.
Yeah. So, Prince Valiant,
Sorry. I want to hear your intro.
For those of you who don't know Prince Valiant is I guess it's a comic strip. I mean, I guess you would have to say it's a comic strip because it's in the funny pages, right?
Right.
It's with the other comic strip. It's among comic strips. So it must be a comic strip. I mean, it's more like one of those things like, I don't know, comics for kids,
yeah,
or
Fox.
Like something. It's not really.
Honestly, I would love to see a 1997 feature film version of Psylocke Fox, but Psylocke Fox is only about 7 years old at that point, so it probably wouldn't happen.
Well, you know, there's still time. It may still happen.
Actually, I've heard that they have licensed Psylocke Fox for a adaption, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, how much airplay Cassandra Cott gets is going to be very important to how interested I am in this. Prince Valiant is not that sort of thing. It's basically, I guess it's a comic strip. It's sequential art. Yeah. So Scott McCloud would call it a comic strip. It's like very serious art, kind of like Apartment 3G or, you know, Merryworth type art,
right,
of like Prince Valiant, who is a prince who hangs out with King Arthur and has medieval type adventures. And there's no word balloons. It's all just text written like underneath, kind of like The Far Side.
Yeah.
Except not good like The Far Side.
And the text is all written in Old English, so if you're young or a new English speaker, you have to really piece your way through it. It's like, why can't you just use typesetting? Come on, you think you are Babar?
Now, many of us who were comic fanatics would read every comic in the funny papers, you know, regardless of how good or bad it was, just to be completists. Like, as a kid, I would even read Kathy and, you know, Apartment 3G, just to read everything.
Yeah.
But Prince Valiant was the one that I would skip, and I didn't feel bad about, because I did not consider this a comic strip. It's something else.
Can't tell you if I read it, because I don't remember it being in any of the papers I grew up with. as a child, once I had reached the age of reading the funnies, I've only had subscribed to three newspapers, the San Diego Union, the San Diego Tribune, which was at that time, the evening version of the Union, and the Fresno Bee. And I guess we got the San Francisco Chronicle for a while too, but none of them ever had, to my knowledge, I don't think they had, I almost said Silent Fox again. I don't think any of them had Prince Valiant, or at least if they did, I sure didn't remember. So maybe I didn't read everything out of a sense of duty the way you did.
We did have it in the Washington Post when I was a kid, but I have not seen it more recently. Probably one of the defining features of Prince Valiant, besides the fact that it has no word balloons, so is very kind of feels very epic and adult and, you know, like a chore to read.
Yeah.
It's also only on Sundays, so it is a weekly comic, which is kind of unusual.
I did not know that about it. I thought there was a daily version. I guess not.
No, it's apparently it's only on Sundays. Now, there are two people who have ever read Prince Valiant, one of which was the host of the Fabulous Funnies, and the other one was Edward VIII, because apparently when he was the Duke of Windsor, he called Prince Valiant the, quote, greatest contribution to English literature in the past 100 years.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know how those Windsors are, extremely inbred. So I would not, you know, I think he's got a little thing called Habsburg brain. So
I was going to say, what do the Habsburgs have to say about Prince Valiant?
Yeah, I do not like put a lot of stock in that. I also feel like
his nose and jaw so small.
I feel like the Duke of Windsor is a sort of like, you know, he's the sort of dullard who would like look at something like Prince Valiant and be impressed by that, you know.
I mean, it's impressive by the standards of the funnies, I guess. But I mean, you know, once in a while, they really made an attempt to include an action thing in the comics. I mean, they last I checked, there was still Amazing Spider-Man as a daily strip. But maybe there isn't anymore. I haven't looked. But, you know, an action comic strip just isn't really. It doesn't really work in the format we have today where you have like a maximum of three panels to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that most comics are supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
And the thing is like Prince Valiant, it's like, yes, the art is very impressive. It's very theatrical and kind of, I guess it's dynamic.
Yeah.
You could say, I mean, I don't remember much happening in it other than like, guys in page boy haircuts kind of hanging around, but I think they probably had battle scenes and stuff.
There's battle scenes and there's actually very, you know, very delicate color work. It was, you might recall in the Fabulous Funnies, they showed them actually painting it in watercolor every day. So, I mean, if you're, I feel like this is really lost on the four color pulp paper, but
yeah, that's the thing is like it's one of those things where it's like, boy, a lot of effort has been put in to, you know, do this, this, you know, incredibly detailed, realistic art, but it's in service to a thing that nobody likes or reads or cares about. So,
yeah, who was it on Dr. Katz, professional therapist, who said, I went to the opera and I was like, wow, look how much work it takes to bore me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's the thing is like, I feel like, cause you know, I feel like they're sort like the Duke of Windsor probably like looks at, you know, something like Peanuts and is like, pedestrian beneath me, low art. And he looks at Prince Valiant and he's like, yes, high art. Yes, yes, yes. But it's like, look, Peanuts is simple because the art needs to complement what the writing, it needs to be only as detailed and as detailed and fancy as is necessary for the joke to work, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing about like a lot of, you know, comic strips is like, yeah, the art might not be particularly good, but it serves a purpose. It needs to convey what's necessary for the writing to hit hardest.
Yeah.
And by that standard, I would say Prince Valiant is a pretty shitty comic because you just look at it and you're instantly, you know, exhausted. You know? It's like every time I see it, I'm just like, it's not like Kathy where over, you know, months and years, it wears you down by attrition because there's so much text. In Prince Valiant, the very first day that you look at it, you're just like, I ain't reading all that.
Yeah.
You know?
Honestly, as a kid, I thought Prince Valiant might have been a Bible thing. You know,
you know, it does look like it, doesn't it? It totally looks like it would be one of those, you know, Jack Chick, the Avengers comics, yeah, or something.
There's something very textbookish about it. And
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is weird because the textbooks I grew up with all came from the 70s. So they all had that kind of shitty Peter Max look.
Did they have the hinge jaw thing in them?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. No, but you're right. It is very textbooky. That is the best way to describe it. Because, you know, you look at the art and instantly as a kid, you're just like, oh, I feel like this is trying to teach me something. This feels too educational.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like it. But I did not realize, actually. I mean, I guess this just shows how incredibly turned off I was by Prince Valiant. I didn't even realize until we were doing this thing that we looked at today, that Prince Valiant is actually hanging out with King Arthur.
Yeah. I assumed it was an all new cast of characters, but no, Prince Valiant is a self insert into the Round Table.
Yes. So he is basically, yeah, he is, I think he is, well, let's see, according to Wikipedia, Valiant, also known as Val, is a Nordic prince from Thule, and he arrives in Camelot, where he becomes friends with Sir Gawain and Sir Tristram, and then he earns the respect of King Arthur and Merlin and becomes a Knight of the Round Table, and then has adventures.
Yep.
But yeah, I did not know any of that. I you know, like you said, I thought he was just, you know, an entire like fictional cast of lords and ladies doing medieval stuff. But it is. Yeah, I guess it is not actually it's not particularly historically accurate. You know,
no.
it's kind of a, you know, what is it like a time of legend type strip. So
however, it does. You know, get less legendary and more historical as it goes on. Supposedly early, yes, Prince Valiant strips would feature like dragons and so forth, but dragons kind of got phased out and it became more historical as the strip went on.
Yeah. It sounds like it is, you know, it's not particularly accurate. It's, you know, it's kind of anachronistic. It's got King Arthur hanging around. There's, you know, there's Romans, there's Vikings, there's all sorts of things that did not exist, you know, in the, you know, in actual history at the same time, but it's a comic strip. We're not here to learn anything.
Right.
It sounds like it's very much like, I guess, Asterix in that sense, which is like,
yeah,
you know, where you're like, oh, okay, this is based in our world. It's real. It's quote unquote realistic, you know, historical. You know, because there's all these peoples existed and a couple of these people were actual historical figures and there's not like dragons and unicorns and stuff. But at the same time, we're not learning anything by reading this. You know, we're probably getting actively dumber by reading it. But that's fine. I actually kind of like that, to be honest.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, there's, you know, if you're going to keep teaching us stuff, you got to keep making room in our heads for things to be taught. You know, that's the upside of disinformation, is that you get to be like, oh, I didn't know that, when you get taught disinformation. And then you get it again when you learn the actual answer.
It's always, you know, a mystery to discover.
You know, did you know that most people think whales are fish? And they're right.
Well, yeah, duh. I mean, they live in the ocean. They breathe water. They're scaly. What else would they be?
They have gills. They are sharks. Yeah. You know, that's why they call them whale sharks.
Yeah. That you know what? This all scans. This sounds right to me. And I don't know enough about sharks to dispute anything. So anyway, heard it here first. Sorry. Oh, smooth. They are smooth. That is true. That 100% is true. I believe that.
Just like a shark.
Yeah. I mean, just like, because that's why Carlos Santana wrote that song about sharks. Anyway, so yeah, y'all heard it here first on A Special Presentation, or Album Not Be Seen Tonight. Whales are fish and sharks are smooth.
Yes. So, however, now most of you must think that, probably thought that already, but guess what? You were wrong. It turns out, no, it's the other way around. Fish are whales.
Oh, geez. Okay. Fish are actually, yeah, I'm kind of embarrassed now that I didn't know that sooner. But it does make sense, because fish, if you look at them, they are smooth. They breathe air, and they're really big. So those are all things that make sense. That, you know, fish are whales.
Yes. I mean, let's not forget that McDonald's used to sell a sandwich, a fish sandwich called the Whaler. Clearly, fish are whales.
I mean, you know, that is, it's semantically correct. And more than that, it's just plain correct. And that Whaler sounds like a whale of a deal. So I would encourage everyone should go to McDonald's. No, don't go to McDonald's right now. I think we're boycotting.
Right, right. Don't go to McDonald's unless you want the terrorists to win.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, wait. Fish are whales are fish, and Prince Valiant, terrible comic strip, but did you know that it? Oh wait, is there anything else we should say about the comic strip Prince Valiant before we actually get into the movie Prince Valiant?
Not especially, honestly, a lot of what we said about the comic strip is actually going to be, much like the, incredible reveal about fish actually being whales, it's going to reveal that everything we said about Prince Valiant is not true about the movie Prince Valiant, parentheses, 1997, end parentheses.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about Prince Valiant, the movie, 1997.
Yeah. Wow, 1997. This came after Batman Forever?
Oh.
Wild.
Really? That's crazy.
It feels like it's from 1987.
It really does. And you know what? I gotta say, so apparently this movie, it did not do very well.
No.
It was universally panned. But I gotta say, I actually really liked it.
Oh, you did? Good. I mean, it was, there are parts where I was like, excuse me, wait, what just happened? But other than that, it was, this feels like a movie that if it were on Mystery Science Theater, people would fall in love with it and be like, this should never have been on Mystery Science Theater. It's too good. But watching it outside of that context, you're like, oh man, this would be such a great MST episode.
It's definitely a, it's this movie. Yeah. Like you said, it feels like it's from the 80s. It feels like whale. It feels like, it's like watching Willow.
Yeah.
You know,
speaking of whom, he's there.
He is. They've got some real star power in this movie. Warwick Davis himself is in it.
Playing a character that I don't think was in the strip.
I do not think he was in the strip either.
He was barely in the movie, too. I think he's got like 3 minutes of screen time total.
Yeah, so apparently Warwick Davis had very harsh things to say about this movie. In his autobiography, he called it an absolute disaster. And he says that even the wonderful Joanna Lumley, who played Morgana Le Fay, could not save it. He blamed this on the director, who he says, quote, seemed intent on partying all night long and giving roles to his friends.
Yeah, I believe that. Yeah, this definitely, some of the people in this movie really come across as like, Yeah. To boldly flee. That's what it feels like. It feels like a movie made for Channel Awesome in some respects. But, you know, that's damning it with faint praise. The movie is better than that by a long shot.
I mean, it's a very weird movie, and I can see why audiences in 1997 did not like it and did not gel with it.
Yeah, I mean, if it comes between this and Men in Black, I'll take Men in Black.
But yeah, yeah. I mean, a big part is like, yeah, it feels cheap. It feels old. It feels like from a prior time, but like it definitely has like huge 80s fantasy vibes. Yeah. Like,
if they had leaned into that and were like, we want to recreate the 80s fantasies that we loved doing last decade, you know, then I think it would have been a stronger movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does feel like it because, there's a scene in this movie where, the Morgana Le Fay is in it.
Yep.
She's, you know, Arthur's evil sister. She digs up a Merlin, corpse of Merlin.
The very beginning scene. Yes.
Yeah. So Merlin has died in events prior to this film. His perfectly preserved corpse is dug up.
He's very freshly dead. Yeah.
Very freshly dead. And he's got his Merlin book that Morgana Le Fay wants. So she takes
says
that.
Right on the front, Merlin.
Merlin. It's like property of Merlin.
He wrote a book called Merlin. And then he forgot to publish it.
Steal.
Oh!
The thing is, though, when we see Merlin, he's wearing this kind of like metal skull cap.
Yeah, and he kind of resembles Merlin as performed by Nicole Williamson, the Gnome King.
He does, but here's the you know who else he actually kind of looks like, I think. He looks like the way that they played Merlin in Excalibur, the movie Excalibur, which was an 80s fantasy film. So I actually almost wonder if that was like intentional. And this was kind of being, they were actually kind of putting this out as almost like a sequel, not like a actual sequel, like a spiritual sequel to Excalibur.
Entirely possible. This was a Irish made movie. So that, by the way, we were talking about the same guy. Nicole Williamson was Merlin in Excalibur.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Oh, and he was also the Gnome King?
Yes. Yes, that's Dr. Worley.
Oh, wow. We were actually more in tune than even I thought.
Yeah, I just couldn't remember the name of the movie Excalibur, and you didn't remember the actor.
Yeah. but that is actually you know what? Actually, I got to look this up now cuz I wonder if that actually was the same actor doing a cameo.
I doubt it, but you never know. Let's Yeah, did they credit the dead body of Merlin?
Yeah, probably not, because I feel like he would have been, like, too big an actor to actually get. So that was probably just, like, a wax dummy or something. But let me look up Prince Valiant.
It would have been very funny to make him laugh.
That's right. Okay, Prince Valiant. According to IMDb, who plays Merlin? Who plays Merlin's corpse? IMDb does not say. So whoever it was, apparently uncredited. Never mind. But, you know, it does seem to me like that metal helmet looks so from Excalibur. I really think that this was intentional.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, were you saying something?
No, I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah. So this movie is like, it feels like old, but at the same time, I don't know how to really describe the vibe for this film, but,
I feel Star Wars prequel.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of got that feel to it. I think this is probably, I'll say it. I think this is way better than the Star Wars prequel.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think so. No Jar Jar. Yeah, makes it better automatically.
Yeah. I do like, I guess my thing is, like, when I saw this film, I had a very similar reaction to when I watched, what is that movie? Mad Max Fury Road. Because when I was watching Mad Max, I was kind of like, that movie, at first I was like, yeah, this is fucking dumb as all hell. This is, like, so stupid. None of this makes any sense. This is so unrealistic. And then it got to the point where they're, like, driving through the desert, and they show the one guy who's got, like, the guitar that just shoots flames.
Yeah, and he's bungee jumping on a stage as they drive him along. Yeah. And then you look it up and find out his actual name that he's credited as is the Doof Warrior.
That's the guy. See, when I saw that guy, I was like, oh, wait, I understand what this is now. I understand what kind of movie I'm watching. This rules. I'm on board. And this movie, Prince Valiant, like, at first I was like, what the fuck? Oh, the Vikings are attacking. Now they're the Scots. Well, this is, you know, well, this is so dumb. And then when they get to the Viking thing, and there's that one, like, random, like, you know, like, leather Amazon walking around just shooting fire out.
Yeah.
What is that? I don't even know what she's got. She's literally just in the background shooting fire. And I was like, I know what this movie is. I'm on board. I'm good.
Oh, no, I'll tell you what this movie is. This is a movie where they made the video game first.
Yes, yes. And it's like, we got to shove all these enemies into the background of this movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, not just like, you know, Super Mario Brothers 1993, where they name some random characters after the enemies. It's like, no, we're doing this as a commercial for the game. So you got to have all the enemies from the game in the thing.
That would explain a lot about this movie, because, boy, it makes some choices.
Sure does.
And I'm going to tell you right now, if you are, you know, if you are hoping for a movie that, you know, that kind of, like, you know, tries to be accurate in any way, or to not just historically accurate, but just accurate to real life. Into what real life is like.
Yep.
Yeah, this is not the film for you, because it is just a melange of, okay, here's some random historical things that happened in the past. We're going to say they happened at the same time.
Right.
And also there's, like, steampunk shit too, you know?
This is the medieval equivalent of cavemen and dinosaurs together.
Yes. Yeah. And I kind of love it. I kind of love that about this. Just the gleeful anachronism, and not just anachronism, but also, like, you know, going for the gusto in this. Let's talk about some of the characters that we're going to meet in Prince Valiant.
Yes.
Cause, there's our hero, Prince Valiant.
Yes. Played by Stephen Moyer. Can you name another Stephen Moyer role off the top of your head?
I cannot.
Me neither.
Well, let's see. According to this was apparently his first movie, according to Wikipedia. Hmm. And he's gone on to do stuff.
Yeah.
He seems
to be what we like to call a working actor.
Yeah. He's definitely been in things and stuff. He was in True Blood, and the only other thing that I would recognize him from is he was in Godzilla, King of the Monsters,
yes,
as an uncredited fighter pilot.
That's odd. Okay.
Yeah. And... he was in Quills, though. So,
oh, Quills. You know. That's okay. That's got some credit. I remember really liking Quills.
So, yeah, he's a working actor. I don't know. How do you feel about him in Prince Valiant?
I think he kind of captures the whole, you know, he has what we like to call, just glad to be here energy.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Prince Valiant is not really a very meaty role. He's kind of one of those guys. He's there to look good and be heroic.
Yeah.
And you know, and really there should, the comic relief sidekicks should get more screen time in this.
Yeah. Movie. The comic relief sidekicks are barely here. Also, there's the interesting fact, and I didn't know this about Prince Valiant, is that he is a comic relief sidekick ostensibly.
Oh, cause he's like, Gawain's squire, isn't
yes.
he?
Yes. Gawain in this, by the way, is played by the director, Anthony Hickox.
Oh, I guess he wanted to try his acting chops.
Yeah. And actually, I kind of like him a lot because he does have that kind of, oh, God, what now expression every time he shows up. But
yeah, he's not bad.
No,
you know,
not at all.
We've actually got, I mean, I gotta say, the cast is pretty good. I think they're pretty well cast.
Yes. We already mentioned Joanna Lumley, who I think is now best known as, I believe she wasn't she the Doctor, or am I thinking of someone else?
Oh, was she? I mostly know her as, Patsy from Absolutely Fabulous.
Oh, I did not realize that was Patsy. Okay. Yeah, that's her. Okay, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I just saw a picture of her in front of the TARDIS, and I was like, was she the new TARDIS? Oh, that's why I was confused. She was the Doctor, but it was in the comic relief episode, The Curse of Fatal Death, the one where the Doctor dies like 20 times and is played like by pretty much everyone from the UK you can name.
Okay, so technically she has been the Doctor, though.
Yeah.
That still counts. Yeah, she plays Morgan Le Fay.
Yeah,
and
she is wonderfully scenery chewing in this.
Yeah, she is a delight. She really kind of got the assignment correct, I think.
You know, she reminds me a lot of Jeremy Irons in Dungeons and Dragons, not the good one.
Yes. She's obviously having a good time in this. I mean, and I feel like in this sort of movie, that is exactly how you should play Morgan Le Fay. As you know, very high camp.
Yeah, totally.
Now we also have Morgan Le Fay has teamed up with some Vikings.
Yeah.
To do evil, and interesting. We have the Viking. I guess he's the king. He's played by Udo Kier, who you know, Udo of course. Yeah, we of course know Udo Kier. He's got a long history in Eurotrash cinema.
Uh huh. Looks like know, his. I think he's best known recently for playing Hitler in something called Hunters.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with that. I've seen him. He's been in lots of stuff. I mean, I think I mostly remember him for he was in Suspiria. But I think he's basically he plays. He's a guy who's very good at playing heavies, you know?
Yeah.
And I think he was in a bunch of those Andy Warhol, Dracula type movies.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. Wikipedia is failing me, so maybe not, but he's been in stuff.
So
he plays,
is he the king or the king's brother?
So according to Wikipedia, he is the king.
Oh, okay.
So he is not Thagnar. He is Sligar.
Yeah, he's Sligon. And this is one of my favorite characters because he is so... This is a great kind of Prince John role. Like this, you know, this sniveling kind of, you know, eel character who should not be wearing a crown, but he is.
Yes.
You know, I really like how they subtly demonstrate this by having him wearing a big scraggly Amish beard with no mustache and just like, oh, you're no king. You are a pretender.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have a mustache. You're not the king.
That is so funny. Cause no, that's exactly, it's like in, Lord of the Rings when they just shaved off Grima Wormtongue's eyebrows. And so you're like looking at this character and just being like, yeah, something's wrong with this guy, but I can't figure out what it is. You know, that Amish beard really does kind of send the message like, yeah, this guy is no threat.
Yeah.
You know,
because because the Amish are no threat. They're peaceful, except he's not peaceful. So but you can tell that he's faking it, that he's not dangerous.
Yeah. And of course, he's got a brother, Thagnar, who does all the actual dirty work for him.
Yes.
And now you know that Thagnar is the real menace, because Thagnar.
That's a dangerous name. Yeah.
That's a dangerous name. I mean, this guy, and this is Thomas Kretschmann, who plays Thagnar. And he is, again, a long history in Eurotrash cinema. It looks like he was also in some of the Hellboy movies by Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
He's got the shaved head. He's constantly sweaty. He kind of dresses like a Scottish leather daddy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are Vikings who dress like they're Scottish, but there's a good reason for that, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do love that about this, because, you know, the Vikings, they kind of have this thing where they just look like a biker gang that would appear in The Warriors or something, you know? And I do love that about this movie, because it's like, no, are we going to try and be like accurate at all to how Vikings are? No, fuck that shit. They're scary, like basically like crazy people who like to do violence.
Yeah.
And
these are my ancestors. I
mean, yeah. There you go. Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard to be humble when you're Danish.
Well, we did discover America.
Oh, well, well,
except we stayed here and started a colony with the locals. But...
How'd that work out?
Well, I mean, we haven't checked on them in a while. Are they okay? We should give them a call.
I'm sure they're fine. But I do like that about this. I feel like, okay, this is the sort of movie that I could just imagine that Prince Valiant would like fight, like the Goths would show up, right?
Yes.
And they would just be dressed like Mall Goths or something. Yes. And you would be like, yeah, that scans. I 100% buy that. This is that sort of movie.
And then another tribe shows up, but they're all dressed in like safety orange, like they're trying to be seen. And they're like, oh no, it's the Visigoths.
See, this there's something for everyone in this film. That's it, you know, I feel like that if there, it's too bad this didn't become a franchise, because really there's so much they could do.
Imagine if this had been the beginning of the King Features cinematic universe.
Oh man. Just at the end, in the post credits, you just have, I don't know, Popeye showing up and be like giving people the thing.
Yeah.
What is it that he gives people to indicate they're part of the team? I don't know. There's a thing.
Yes. I don't know, but no. Yeah, it would end with Merlin being like, you know, in some thousand years, this spinach plant will grow, and whoever eats it will gain the strength of 100 men. I will not live to see that day, but perhaps someone will.
Yeah. So they there's I feel like. This world, there's a lot to explore in it, which would be a lot of fun, because it's a lot more fun than the comic strip.
Yeah.
But it's sillier.
So it is kind of intentionally sillier.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is the comic strip is so full of itself. It's like, yes. You know, it wants to take you to take it seriously. And this movie is not doing that.
However,
which I really appreciate.
It should be noted that I really admire the animated transitions where they actually use panels from the comic, and they have characters fade away into comic panels, and then it literally pans over to the next panel to show you what's happening in the next scene.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. That's kind of a fun little nod to the source material.
Yeah.
I feel like Anthony Hickox, our director, yep. You know, did have some, even though even though he was too busy partying, apparently, to make a decent movie.
Yeah.
It feels like he does have some reverence for the source material. He definitely put his own stamp on it.
Uh-huh.
I think it works well. But anyway, so Thagnar is definitely the real, you know, he's, you know, like if Morgana Le Fay was Jeremy Irons, Thagnar is that bald guy with the blue lips.
Yeah. You gotta have a bald guy who's the real danger. Why is that?
I mean, I think you just look tough when you're bald, you know?
Yeah.
It's a look, you know, it's like, oh, that guy is bad news.
Like, oh shit, that guy looks like Charlie Brown. Run.
Yeah. It's like, oh God, you know, it's like that guy's so tough. He doesn't even need hair. That's how tough he is. You know? So yeah, Thagnar is like, you know, he's the real menace, and you kind of know that he is going to like off his brother at some point.
Yeah.
His brothers were Slagnar.
Sligon is so the name you would give to like a slime character in an action figure line. You know, the forces of the evil Sligon are attacking.
It doesn't really sound like a Viking name.
No, it doesn't.
But I mean, these are also like barely Vikings.
No.
I do like when we see the Viking throne room, it's like they've got like a little like water feature going on in it. Kind of like
a well lit water feature. So it's like lava. I was like, come on. This is just the Bowser level in Mario Kart.
Yeah, it is very cool. I actually thought that was supposed to be lava, but later on we found out it is just very well lit water. You know, and there's like a little waterfall behind the throne, and like there's all this cool stuff. Like I think the Viking King, if he gets mad, he can pull like a lever and stuff will move. You know, stuff.
Yeah,
happens.
He pulls a lever to make a bridge to cross over his water feature, and you know, I thought he was gonna use that lever more often to like drop people into pits. I don't think it comes.
Yeah.
up.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they were setting it up, and it looks like this movie was. Heavily recut before it was released. So maybe there was more there.
That's the number one thing that was my first takeaway from watching it was, you know, people talk about how badly edited Krull is, but this is so much worse. There are things where, there were a lot of things where I had to, you know, back up, like what happened? I was looking away for a second.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a couple things that I'm still not sure about, but, I think we'll get to all that.
Yeah.
So we've got all our villains, right? Sligar, Morgan Le Fay, Thagnar. There's Prince Valiant we mentioned.
Yeah.
We mentioned Sir Gawain is in this. Let's see. We also have Princess Eileen, played by a young Catherine Hagel.
Yes.
Who you might know from Knocked Up.
Years before she was Knocked Up. Yes.
Yes.
That movie sucks.
Oh, well, I wonder why. You have strong feelings about Knocked Up?
I mean, it's like, well, I wonder who came to them with the idea for Knocked Up. Is like, hey, let's make a movie about pregnancy from the man's point of view. It's like, has there ever been one that wasn't?
I just imagine, Ethan, you leaving the theater like Nelson on The Simpsons leaving the Naked Lunch showing. Yeah. Just being like, I can think of two things wrong with that title.
Yeah.
But Catherine Hagel, I have to say, I think she was really good in this movie. I was like, because she's got the perfect look for a princess. She's got this like... milk fed look that just works.
Yeah.
Right.
And she reminded me a lot of the Childlike Empress.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing is like, she's, this is going to sound, bad, but I'm going to say it is she manages to get this perfect combination of chastity and horniness that makes her performance like just work so well. Because, you know, she's the princess, so she's got to be like, oh, I'm very pure and prissy and all that. But also, I super want Prince Valiant's bone. So, you know, and that's a difficult, needle to thread. Yeah. But she does, I would thought she did a really good job in this.
And she also wants to be a knight herself. So there's a good scene where she gets to put on armor and defend herself.
Yes, there's a lot going on with her. Also, like, she really looks good in that armor.
Yeah, she does. Like, no denying that.
I was like, I do like that. It was like, oh, by the way, I got some girl armor. Where'd you get that? I just got it. I just have it. It's like, well, you know, it's you fill it out well.
Well, she's a princess. She could, you know, are they going to tell her no when she says, make me a suit of armor that I could wear to dinner?
Good point. It's a very Fantagiro type scene, but she's, yeah, I really like Catherine Hagel's performance in this, despite some confusion about what actually happens.
Yes.
With her in this movie. let's see. We've got Edward Fox, who plays King Arthur, and, I kind of like his
Kong Arthur, actually. He comes across as, you know, I mean, this is King Arthur. A lot of us are mostly familiar with the Sword in the Stone era Arthur, where he's, you know, learning to fill the shoes of a king. But this is, you know, the King Arthur from the era of the Round Table, where he is, you know, he has that kind of Optimus Prime quality, where you're just like, oh yeah, this is why everyone defaults to him, why he's the leader.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought it was a really good performance, because, you know, he has that regal bearing that you can tell that's why he's the king. But there's also kind of a little bit of like weariness to the performance,
because
you feel like this is King Arthur right before, you know, the troubles.
Yeah,
you know, right before the Mort de Arthur.
Yeah.
So
I mean, Merlin is already dead when this starts. So he's you know, he's missing his, you know, the power behind the throne.
And yeah. But yeah, we don't have a Guinevere in this movie at all, actually, now that I just realized. No.
I mentioned Sword in the Stone because actually Sir Kay and Sir Ector are in this, but I'm not sure who's who. Sir Kay is played by the guy from Gremlins.
Oh, which guy?
Billy.
Oh, huh. I did not recognize him. I didn't see him there.
Yeah.
I know that one of the knights gets killed early on in the movie, but I don't know who that is.
Mm.
Like when the Vikings show up and like, you know, steal Excalibur. Let's see.
Gawain is here. So Galahad is here, but I don't think Lancelot is here. So, so no Guinevere, no Lancelot. What are they up
well,
to?
You know, I'm glad that this movie is staying true to canon. So we've got the knights. We get a couple of comic relief guys who appear in this, who I think are classic comic relief kind of archetypes from this sort of film. There's Ron Perlman playing a character called Baltar, which sounds like a character who would be a Transformer.
It does. I know there's one named Boltax. Oh, you want some Transformer names? Look a little further down and you have characters whose names are Blade, Flame, Claw, Driller, Chromeheart.
Well, I mean, I assume these are all like members of the Viking contingent.
Yeah.
Like, the Vikings in this are basically American gladiators.
Yeah,
so,
they are.
You know.
I was going to say, it's like, I didn't know that Denmark had been colonized by the Decepticons at this point.
there's a lot of like, yeah, weird names in this. Now, and Baltar.
Two guys named Thumper.
Thumper. Okay.
I'm thumping. That's why they call me Thumper.
Yeah, it makes sense. That scans. So Ron Perlman, who we all know as Hellboy and.
Yeah.
Hellman and other things.
Yeah, I love his mayonnaise.
Yeah. was he the Beast in Beauty and the Beast?
In the TV series. That was where everyone got to know Ron Perlman and where he got his reputation as the best actor under makeup. And of course, I have a special fondness for his appearance in animation as the voice of Clayface in Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, I did not know that was Ron Perlman.
Yeah, it's haunting. It's amazing the kind of voices that these, you know, kind of comic actors tended to turn out. Like, you know, a lot of people don't realize that Two-Face was voiced by Bull from Night Court.
Oh, I did not know that either.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess it's more versatile than you would think.
Yeah. I mean, it's called acting.
Yeah. I mean, Ron Perlman's doing kind of the Ron Perlman voice in this.
Yes.
Now, his character is, I guess you'd call him, he's like a merry man.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, he's a rogue, but a friendly rogue.
Yeah. He seems to be in the princess kidnapping business, but he doesn't mean no harm by it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a job.
And, yeah.
How you
yeah.
can get I mean, princesses.
No. He teams up with Prince Valiant, but we don't really see as much of him as I feel like we should.
Yeah.
Because he definitely is kind of like a Little John type character in this.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure what role he was playing. He seemed to mostly just be, it felt like they were throwing him in as a Han Solo figure, but after he got them passage, they didn't have any more use for him.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the problem. I mean, that is one of the problems in this movie is there are a couple characters that feel like they should have, they have a lot of potential, and then we don't get nearly as much of them as one would like.
From what I've read, a lot of scenes were cut. That would make sense. I believe that's what Warwick Davis was complaining about. Speaking of whom, yes, we also meet Warwick Davis at the same time as we meet Ron Perlman. So another actor who's best known for being under heavy makeup.
Yes. Now, Warwick Davis is playing against type in this, I think. he is, or is he? Because we don't. You know what? This is the interesting thing about Warwick Davis's character in this, right?
Yeah.
I feel like we don't actually see much of him. He doesn't have much time to really do anything to establish his character. But, like, just looking at him, you just immediately make up a backstory and character for him in your head. So he doesn't have to do that much, you know?
Yeah, for real. He's, what happens is Valiant rescues him from trouble, and he just says, "Hey, wherever you're going, I'm gonna go."
Yeah.
So,
but
like Howard the Duck.
Thing is, yeah, he's just like, yeah, he just kind of goes along. But he's got this like big, like kind of like musketeer hat. He's got this this kind of like this curly like what do you call it, a handlebar mustache type thing.
Yeah.
He's got an eye patch. As soon as I saw him, I was just like. It's Kanunda, the world's second greatest lover from the Discworld books. he has this aura about him where you're just like, this is a guy who probably, fucks for money.
I was like, I was gonna say, there should have been a scene where Warwick Davis as Pichette, that's the name of his character, where he finds his way into the harem.
Yes.
In fact, that would have been a great thing to happen. Would we have the king there in the harem, and then Pichette falls in, and the king sees him and is like, "Well, there go my Sundays."
Yeah, yeah. I feel like when we were introduced to Pichette, he should have been like running away from a cuckolded husband. You know?
Yes, he should have. He should have been the Mad Mardigan of this movie. Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, the thing with Warwick Davis is he is an actor who has an incredible charisma.
Yeah,
you know?
He really does. Like, you.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reason why
he played, I think when he plays short roles, but you could easily put him in a role where you just shot him from the chest up and, you know, everyone would buy him as, you know, the strapping hero.
Yeah. Like, I think when he showed up on like Star Wars, he was what, like 17 or something?
He was 11.
Oh, 11. Oh, wow. Okay.
He was 17 when he played Willow.
Ah, geez. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So he felt a little awkward, with the woman who played his wife, who was twice his age.
Wow. that's the thing is I think like as soon as he showed up, like, yeah. The man with the beard. What's his name? The Star Wars man.
Oh, Lucas.
Lucas, thank you. George Lucas probably immediately recognized, yeah, this is a guy who's got it, you know? When he's on the screen, when he's not on the screen, everyone should be asking, where's Warwick Davis?
Yeah.
You know, and there are a lot, there are certain actors who are kind of like that, where like, even when they do very little acting, you're just like, oh, I like seeing him on, I like him. I want to see more of him.
I mean, regardless of, you know, love or hate Uwe Boll, and most people hate him, I think he was right when, you know, he spent like 10 minutes with a actress who was playing a minor role and talked to her and was like, well, why are we shooting Blood Rain with this woman? We should have you as the star. And so he basically remade the whole movie as Blubberella with her.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. He was just like, you know, she had a minor role as a secretary, and he was just so impressed with her presence, just talking to her. He was like, you know, we've got all these sets. Let's just do it again, but better, but with you this time.
Wow. Okay. I still need to see that movie.
Yeah. Obviously, she's not a fan of the title, but...
Oh, well, yeah. Well, hopefully, yeah, I can see why she might not be. But yeah, so we have, Warwick Davis is in this. Let's see. I think that's most of our cast. Was there anyone else that we forgot?
No one that I can really see. The rest of the cast is things like Tiny and Stable Boy and Matron.
Yeah. I guess we should mention there's Ben Pullen as Prince Arn.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So that's Princess Eileen's original fiancé.
Yeah. He is, in fact, he is a character from the comic strip. So, you know, it's not just Prince Valiant hanging out with the King Arthur crowd. There is, in fact, another Prince Valiant character in here with them. Looks like he's best known for playing Ivanhoe on Dark Knight.
Oh, I didn't know that Ivanhoe was character in The Dark Knight.
Yeah. No, not the movie The Dark Knight, the show Dark Knight from 2000 to 2002.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with it.
I think it's part of the Highlander family.
Oh, yeah, that sounds about right. Prince Arn he's kind of an important character in this movie because, you know, Princess Eileen is betrothed to him, but she's kind of gradually getting, you know, the hots for Prince Valiant. So, you know, they have to kind of break up. And it's one of those movies where, like, you know, they could just make him an asshole, so you don't care about that. But they try to develop him a little so that he's, you know, you do kind of feel for him. And he's kind of he's hot-headed, but at the same time, honorable, because he does say, oh, I would not be with a woman who was not in love with me. Does he die? I think he gets killed, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does in fact die, and it's played surprisingly. It's kind of surprisingly downplayed. There's just no mention of him after he dies. If I were doing this, there would be at least a little bit of Eileen being like, I don't know if I can go to you just yet. The man I was going to marry just died.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, some of the editing in this leaves a little to be desired because, I mean, I looked away and then the rest of the movie, I was like, where's Prince Arn? Did he die? Because I don't see him anymore.
Yeah. Whenever Prince Arn isn't on the screen.
Speaking of editing, because there are a lot of weird things. They're like those dudes, like, remember when they bring Princess Eileen back?
Yeah, okay, they're taking her back. Let's get into the movie. They've got this big train of knights, and then suddenly two of them get knocked out by Home Alone-style traps, and then the rest are all gone, and also the princess has disappeared in the space of a second.
Yeah, and so she gets kidnapped. That's by Baltar, by Ron Perlman, who now has her in a cave with a bunch of other princesses he seems to have kidnapped.
That's Baltar? I didn't realize. I thought that was someone else.
No, that's Baltar in the cave.
Oh.
Because then when, because then Prince Valiant shows up and Baltar pushes a button on his chair and it shoots like arrows.
That's right.
You know, and, but like there's Eileen in the cave, and it looks like there's a couple other women as well. There's like, I think a second princess and a girl, but then Valiant like rescues them and kicks Baltar out. And as they leave, these other princesses never get mentioned again. And then Baltar is sitting in a tree and he sees Prince Valiant's like sigil on his, on his medallion. And then he realizes, oh, that's actually the, Prince Valiant is the true heir to Thule, which, you know, Sligon, the usurper, stole his dad's kingdom, you know, but that we find out later in the movie. But yeah, this whole sequence is very confusing. And then, like, when they finally arrive to give her back home, it turns out, like, someone, she sees a guy, and she's like, that's my guy, I'll go to him. But it turns out, like, someone has killed him, and they're using him as a puppet?
Yeah, they've got a little guy hiding behind him, making him wave.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, those are the Vikings that do that thing, right? Because I think they show up and start beating everyone up.
Yeah.
The editing, again, very confusing in a lot of this stuff. That's really my biggest complaint about this film, because there's so much cool stuff happening, but it's kind of hard to tell what's going on sometimes.
Yeah.
But
the Michael Bay phenomenon.
Oh yeah, definitely. We should mention that what sets everything in motion is Morgana Le Fay, she gets Merlin's book, and then they want to steal Excalibur. So the Vikings, she sends the Vikings to Camelot. There's a joust going on, so King Arthur is distracted watching a joust, and he leaves his sword just in he just leaves a sword in his room.
Yeah, he just kind of dropped it by the side of his throne. I was like, you know, wasn't that sword given to you by the Lady of the Lake? I mean, do you think she can just get you another one? You really need to take care of it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not even in a scabbard.
Yeah, because King Arthur literally says, without Excalibur, I have no authority as king. My entire kingdom crumbles. Yeah, so maybe keep it with you, man. Yeah. Maybe don't just leave it, like, you know.
I mean,
but no, he's just got it. It's just sitting around.
So does that mean that every king of England has to wield Excalibur, or else you're not king, or just him?
I've only ever, you know, it's never come up again. Because I think after he dies, don't they just throw it in the lake?
Yeah, okay, so King Charles does not wield Excalibur.
No, that's why no one recognizes his authority.
Yeah.
Loser. Ugh, what a loser. But, okay, I will say this for King Arthur. He does not leave the sword entirely unguarded. It's just, his sword is lying around in the round room, you know, the round table room.
Yeah, okay.
And there is one guy guarding it by standing and just staring away from the sword at the wall.
Yeah, he's watching the tournament.
Oh, that's what he's doing. Okay. Well, he sucks because the Vikings come up through a trap door and they shoot him and then they steal the sword.
Shouldn't the guards know there's a trap door? Shouldn't, you know,
you would think.
Shouldn't one of the things that you're doing, you know, when you're guarding the room be to, like, stand on the trap door or at least keep it locked?
Well, apparently, I'm assuming only Morgan Le Fay knows about this trapdoor. I don't know how she knows or anything. I mean,
wasn't she, you know, she's like Arthur's half-sister, right?
Yeah.
I presume she's been to Camelot at some point.
I guess it makes sense. I don't know much about Morgan Le Fay.
No.
Is she a fae? Like...
Is she a fae or is she a Fairchild? I don't know the difference.
I always assume she's like she's a sorceress or something.
Yeah, she's a
right?
witch. Yeah.
Yeah.
This round room, isn't there supposed to be a table in it?
Yeah, they don't have the round table. They just kind of sit in.
Have they not instituted the round table just yet?
They just sit in a circle, you know?
Yeah.
I guess, and look at each other.
Yes. King Arthur of the Talking Stick.
I feel like it would be funny if at the end of this movie, they'd be like, you know what? Let's put a table there so no one can use that trap door anymore. We'll call it the round table.
Yay!
And that now you know the rest of the story.
Cut to 300 years later, and it's a pizza place. Yay!
You know, the last honest pizza. You know, it is funny because, like, we were just talking about Roundtable Pizza, recently, you know, because like it's kind of vaguely King Arthur themed.
Yeah, only vaguely. If you like take a, you only really see the King Arthur theme if you ask for the kids menu, or at least it used to be that way. I don't know if there's even a kids menu anymore.
I assume there is. I mean, I know that if you go into some of the restaurants, they'll have like shields on the walls, but like, you know, not a lot of them. Most of them are, it's pretty half-assed. But one of the things that I think is funny is like, cause if you read the menu, there'll be things on there. Like, you know, that's kind of thematic. Some of the pizza names.
Yeah.
And one of them is Montague's All Meat Marvel. And it's like, well, okay, look, Montague is from Romeo and Juliet, not from King Arthur. And I get what you're going for. It's kind of medieval-y. It's still a medieval kind of type thing. But
1600s versus, you know, 1100s.
Yeah, you know, but like this movie, it's all one big medieval melange, right?
One big medieval mess. Alakazam!
It's Montague's All Medieval Mess. But here's the thing. If you're going for the alliteration, it's like, okay, I would forgive you if there were no M's in the Arthur mythos, but you could call it Merlin's All Meat Marvel. You could call it Morgan Le Fay's All Meat Marvel.
Yeah.
I mean, you could call it Mordred's All Meat Marvel. There's a lot of M's in the King Arthur mythos is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Who else in this movie? Oh, you could call it Monday's All Meat Marvel.
Oh, that's right. Because we do have Monday. We haven't even gotten to the week, the harem.
Yeah, the days of the week. Yeah. Oh, and we're at an hour now. Do you want to leave people hanging with the promise that next week we're going to talk about the harem?
Yeah, let's do that. I think we can talk another hour about this movie. Yes,
I think so too. So
about Montague's All Movie Marvel. All right, tune in next week. We're going to talk about the harem.
What the heck is a harem?